Good evening, everybody. Welcome to everybody, and I want to say a special thank you to the Schwartzes who are sponsoring tonight's Shir Le'ilui Nishmas, Shimon Yosef Ben Lipman Tzvi. That's Mr. Simon Metalis, whose ninth Yahrzeit was yesterday. The limud should be Le'ilui Nishmasai, and unfortunately, I didn't have the opportunity of meeting him, but just over the last year, I've had to hear a lot more about him in the context of the Mitalises and their children who make so much of a difference in our community. And when looking back at people like this who had to be pioneers, who were forced to become leaders, who were forced to achieve, it's really humbling to think about what people had to do to get where they had to, and Baruch Hashem, the legacy continues. So thank you for joining us in sponsorship and learning. Let's learn together. Let's start at the beginning. So I wanted to just relate as a start off just a conversation which took place this morning on the topic of Yonatan and David, because that's the topic we're in. So I happened to be learning Pirkei Avos with my 8-year-old this morning, just before the school bus arrives, and we talked about that particular Mishnah in Pirkei, which talks about Ava Shetaluya Badavar and Ava She'ena Taluya Badavar. Love which is dependent on a particular item or we'll call it thing, and love which is independent of a particular thing. And what I did was I was trying to describe it in details which would be understandable at that capacity. So I was saying, imagine that you had a friend whenever you went to his house, he always let you play Xbox and he always gave you candies. And that's why you really like to go to his house. And then one day you go to his house and no candies. So would you enjoy playing with him just as much, even though there are no candies, or not? So that was the kind of the discussion that we were having, and whether friendship is dependent on some item or not. So after this conversation, and we're busy carrying on the conversation, the little 5-year-old who is sitting around the side of the couch gets up and walks out, and he starts muttering to himself. And he says to himself, but Shmuel P, which is his friend's name, Shmuel P always has candy at his house. So I think the lesson learned is that Ava Shetaluya Badavar is a necessary part of our fabric of our society at certain ages. But nonetheless, I thought I wanted to share that because we dealt with that mission last week, and I thought it was a very fascinating conversation which ensued. So let's try to focus tonight. There's two themes we're going to focus on this evening. We'll try to come out with a little bit more of a picture. One theme is the theme of power. How is it that we gain power? How is it that we really access power? That's going to be one question I want to sort of leave lurking in the background. Another question I'd like to leave in the background is with sort of continuing from last week, is the power of love and the dangers of love, because we're getting into a very complicated relationship over here. As David and Shaul's relationship is solidifying in a particular way, David and Shaul's family is solidifying in a different way, and that's why this is so complex. So we're going to have to try to watch that unfold, and you know, sometimes we think to ourselves that, you know, hate is much more powerful than love. Meaning if you see the power of hate in this world, and the massacres and the depravity which has been created in this world owing to hate, you think, well, hate always triumphs love. But we're actually going to see that love is much more powerful and dangerous than hate can be, which is one of the themes of this parak unfolds. So let's start. We left off where Shaul is inadvertently trying to get rid of David because he feels that David is becoming too powerful. And at every turn that he tries to either get rid of him, depose of him, then at that exact turn is where David HaMelech succeeds more. So he sends him out to the front, he becomes more successful. He brings him back to the palace, he becomes more successful. David is clearly not under the influence of Shaul to the degree that he'd like him to. So now, we enter into the next section, which is the marriage of David. So we are moving now in the Psukim, starting Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Yud Zayin to Yud Tes. Let's do that little segment together. Then let's think about what's happening over here and this episode. This is one of the lesser-known episodes of David, which is actually quite fascinating. And that is that David HaMelech was actually eligible to marry somebody else. And that is not Michal, but Michal's older sister. So here we go. The Psukim tell us the following. Vayomer Shaul el David, Hine bitzi hagdola meirav, oisa eten loch li'echol isha, ach heye li leven chayil vilochem milchamos Hashem. So he says, I'm going to marry you off to my oldest daughter, Merav, and you will be a strong warrior, meaning that's going to be apparently the price, or that's the expectation of this marriage. V'shol Amar, and now Tanakh reports an aside. So that's what Shaul said to David, but now you know what Shaul says to himself in the morning when he looks at himself in the mirror. Al tehi yadi boy, utehi vo yad plishtim. So in the morning, as he is scheming to himself, he says, I don't want to do the dirty work. Let the plishtim do the dirty work. So why am I setting him up with Merav? Because to be eligible for her, he's going to have to fight. To fight, he's probably going to lose. So let him do that. Wow, that's a really twisted way of thinking about marriage. Nonetheless, this is what his suggestion is. Vayomer David el Shaul. And David responds, and you can imagine, you know, is David reading the subtext? Is he listening innocently to the and naively just to the text? What is David going to say? Mi anochi umi chaya mishpachas avi b'Yisrael ki eyeh chas al melech. He says, who am I to be the son-in-law of the king? Right now, just remember, the king has just thrown a spear at him, right? So, you know, that isn't always the right step for the father-in-law, son-in-law relationship, necessarily. We don't know if David is responding to that. But David Melech sort of demurs, and he doesn't want to get involved. But the next passage says that apparently they try to set it up, and when the time came for the joyous event, she was married already. She found someone else. Sounds is like there's sort of like this shadow of the love on story over here. You know, there's two girls, the older girl, the younger girl, the older girl, and there's a switch around set happening. We see something over here going on. Very strange what's happening over here. But let's just ask a very basic question. Here's the deal. When there was this Goliath whole episode, so Shaul HaMelech made three promises. Remember this? So Shaul made a few promises, right? One of them was that whoever be the knight who conquers the giant shall marry my daughter. So over here, like the meaning, well, why is he putting a condition? Like, you know, says, well, there's actually an asterisk. In the fine print, it said you have to be a very strong warrior, right? I mean, like, you know, you probably didn't have time to review that before you went out to battle. But like, that's not fair. He said, whoever wins marries my daughter. No, there weren't conditions applied to that. What's he doing? Why is he pulling the wool over David's eyes? So the Mefarshim say, actually, Shaul did say he would marry his daughter, but he didn't say which daughter. So you know what's he doing over here? He's saying, you want to marry my oldest daughter, which is one step closer to being an heir to the throne. You want to marry my older daughter? Oh, for her, you have to go to the battlefield, right? So he does have leverage. The leverage is in which daughter? And that's maybe why this is so important as to what he's doing over here. So if you can think about this in this way, Shaul is using every bit of we'll call it, you know, everything that he can grasp onto to hold power over David. Even which daughter it is. That's how far he is going. That's what the Malbim suggests when it comes to this over here. Fascinating suggestion. Now, why is he doing this again? What's behind all of this? What's he trying to achieve?
Send him out to get killed.
Right. So it sounds like he really wants to get David killed. So take a look at what the Al Sheikh says over here. Interestingly enough, so what ended up happening in the end of the day? Take a look at source 19 over here on page 4 in the Mefarshim. He says, interesting thing. He says, let's go to the end of the first line where there's a parody. He says, V'lo amar vayitna. When it came to marrying her, it doesn't say that Shaul had married her off already. I mean, that would have been just terribly devious, right? That wasn't what was going on. Rather, it shows that Shaul really wasn't fully comfortable giving her over in marriage to him. So he says, you know what? It was clear that that he wasn't really interested in marrying her to David. Actually, I by mistake eclipsed the rest of this Al Sheikh. But the Al Sheikh continues to say, and therefore, in the meantime, she got up and said, "Well, I'm finding my own person." So I mean to say, Merav gets up and she says, I'm not going to be the tool in anybody else's hand. I'm not going to be the pawn that somebody else is using in a political scheme. I'm going to go find my suitor. And off she goes, and she finds Adriel. And that's what happened in between. So it's kind of it's a very complex relationship over here. Here's Shaul trying to use her as leverage for David. David moving away from the deal. And in the meantime, Merav realizing that this smells sour and finds her own shidduch in the meantime. Yeah, so that's a great question. The way that this is understood is... Yeah, you know, the way the Malbim says it is she hiskad shah shalomidas avia. No. She eloped. That was it. Yeah. Very interesting question, you know. I'm going to come back to this in a second. I'm reading a book now. Somebody gave me a book to read. I don't really have time to read. But in the time that I don't have to read, there's a book called Dogs of God, which is about the Inquisition in Spain. The Dogs of God refers to the Dominican friars. That was the name that they gave themselves, the Hounds of God, as they hunted down the infidel. And it's a very fascinating history, a really terrible, decrepit, and terrifying stage in history in the 1400s in Spain. But yes, even against the tide of times, there were very powerful women. And Isabella is an example who created a marriage where she was the queen of Spain before her husband. So we have very, very powerful women. This is much later, agreed, but I'm just saying as an example, there are many people who went against the tide of convention. Nonetheless, that's what the Malbim says. Fascinating. What happens over here is this triangle breaks apart. There's this Shaul, David, Merav. Merav breaks out of the triangle because she knows this is not happening. Merav is the only person in Shaul's family who we don't know so much about her relationship with David. Fascinating enough at this point. Meaning to say, all we know is she doesn't want in, she finds somebody else. We know about Shaul's relationship, we've heard about Yonatan's, and now we meet the third person, which is Michal, and the complexity of her relationship. So, here we have it. Michal is a different story altogether. Michal is the younger sister. Let's take a look at this, and let's do a few psukim together, and then think about this outside. V'te'ehav Michal bas Shaul es David, v'yagidu l'Shaul v'yishar bal hadover be'enov. So now, in the meantime, Michal has fallen in love with David. Now, it's interesting because this seems to be without, you know, like any particular cause. It doesn't sound like David was courting Michal. But nonetheless, she on the sideline sounds like she has fallen in love with him. And Shaul now says, this is a great idea. So what does he say? So what does Shaul say to himself? Great! Another opportunity. This is it. I'm going to get him to get killed because I know what he wants. And what he wants is a demand. What a demand means leverage. And therefore, I can leverage him into battle. Fantastic. So now we have Shaul's outside voice, his external voice, which he presents to David. And he says, you know, you can marry, you know, whether this means the second child or it'll be like you married the first, the both of them. There's a debate in Chazal whether he really did marry Merav or not, technically speaking. He says, so Shaul's a little more tactful. So instead of saying, David, here's the proposition, he goes to David HaMelech's friends. Let's call him David at this point in time. He says, he goes to David's friends and he says, go tell him, the king really wants you. Now's your opportunity. Marry into the king's family. And they conveyed the message. David, me marrying into the king's family? I'm just a poor man. What do you think David's trying to really get at over here? What usually happens when you marry in those days? Man, woman. So what happens? How does the transaction work in those days? The man has to pay an immense amount of money, and certainly if you're marrying into the king's family, you have to pay a dowry. So what's David HaMelech essentially saying? I'm too poor for that dowry, right? Now, whether David HaMelech was trying to push him off, he's also saying, I'm nikle, I'm you know, despised, I'm lowly. But he's also saying, I'm poor. Now, this happens to be interesting because this is interesting to think about in the sense that Shaul HaMelech had also promised something else for the person who conquered Goliath. And that was? You're right. He's going to give him money. There's going to be a monetary compensation. What's Shaul HaMelech really saying to Shaul HaMelech? Okay. He's saying to him, well, it's all very nice that you're offering your daughter finally, but in the end of the day, you also promised financial compensation. I don't have anything in the bank account for this dowry. Right? That's what Avimelech sounds like he's saying over here. So there's a little bit of a dig over here at Shaul's believability. So Vayagidu Avdei Shaul lo lemor kadvorim o'ele diber David. So they report back, no go, Shaul. Pasuk Kofei. Vayamah Shaul koi samrula David ein chafeitz lamelech b'mohar. I don't want a dowry. He reads exactly what David says. I'm not looking for money. I have something much simpler than money. Kim b'me'er orlos plishtim linokim o'ave amelech. All I want is 100 foreskins of the Philistines. You don't even have to kill them. Just circumcise them. V'sha'ul choshav l'hapil es David b'yad plishtim. And Shaul thinks to, and in the meantime, we're given a side now as the reader, you know, that's probably not a very easy thing to accomplish, right? So what he's saying is that's going to, that's, you know what that's going to do? It's like sending somebody into the hornet's nest, right? And that's perfect. That's exactly what he wants. So you see what's happening in Shaul's very, very clever here. He's using exactly David's excuse as the reason to leverage more danger. I don't have money. I don't need money. I just need valor. Valor comes with danger. But that's essentially what he's saying to David in the conversation. Very, very, very smart but cruel change over here. So, Vayagidu avadav leDavid es hadvarim ha'ele, and they said to David, so and so, this is the king's condition. And he said, no problem. And so it was, even before the time of the contract was up, he goes and smites 200 men. So he returns with a double dowry, 200 foreskins. And with that romantic gift, they got married. So that's what happens over here. So David HaMelech over here, ultimately, David HaMelech has essentially not only achieved what the king wanted, but he has doubled it. It's almost like it's sort of putting it back in Shaul's face, in a sense. Vayar Shaul vayeda ki Hashemim David. He realized that David is clearly being protected here. U'michal bas Shaul ahav tohu. And she knows that Michal really does love him. Vayosef Shaul leiro mipnei David oid, and he becomes rather afraid of David. Vayhi Shaul oyeves David kol ha'amim, and from this point onwards, he became an enemy to David all the time. Now we saw before he was oyein es David; he had a bad eye out for David. This is a degree further. This is oyev es David; he becomes an eternal enemy. That's a very sad statement because Tanakh is essentially locking Shaul into a spiral of hate for the rest of his life. I mean, that's not Tanakh saying it happening now, but this is Tanakh with his longitudinal perspective saying, this is the point from now, there is no return from Shaul and his relationship with David, which is a terrifying point. And this is where it happens.
The worst thing is that it really goes against God, because it says that he knows that this is from
God. You're right. It's a very, very sad thing, but remember that there is an inverse relationship over here. To the degree that David HaMelech is protected by God, is the degree that Shaul HaMelech is losing his presence of God, and so that's the anger. He knows it. That's exactly what's so angering. That's what's so painful about this experience. He does know, but it's extremely painful for him, and he's going to fight it with all his might. So
I find it in his character. That's what I'm saying. I said we always see his character that he's very not self-confident in himself, and therefore he has no confidence in or emunah because of that. So therefore, his lack of self-confidence in everything he did from day one shows that. And he did listen to God. He told him to kill Ahab, right? And then he let him.
Okay, right.
Right, and then let him live. You know, wherever it is.
Right. So you know, I hear what you're doing. I prefer to, at this point, to give Shaul the years of good, and meaning to say there were certain things which you didn't do right, but I don't want to import those into the. I would say at this point in time, when Hashem leaves him, and there's this very dark cloud over him, all the minutiae and the personality become more exacerbated.
Yes.
But I do want to leave him with a very good, because he was chosen by God, as we say, learn earlier in Shmuel Aleph, we learned that there was no one like him. He was a very, very good person. It just happens to be that the you know, unfortunately, sometimes the cycles of power become very, very powerful, and the minutiae become very, very bigger.
Or he needs to protect
himself, his kingdom.
I think in those times, if we have to go back, like I said before, about this,
to what's happening, right?
To what's happening in those times. In those times, look, we see with David later that his sons are rebelling against him. So the king's position was to save his kingdom, to save his position. Now, I don't know if Shaul knew that David was the next king.
I think
so
he does.
He does know that.
I think he does.
Really troubled.
No, I think he does. The Mefarshim say, in the last week when we learned this, the Mefarshim say that he realized that David was the next of kin. This, in a certain sense, was self-protection. This is vindictive, unfortunately.
So you couldn't expect him to just step down.
He's not going to. It's too hard for him to do this at this point. But David, by the way, David HaMelech respects that decision, and David HaMelech won't kill him. As long as he's not stepped down. Carrie, you just want another last comment?
Yeah, very quick. I probably don't know what I'm talking about. No. But I personally think that human feelings and emotions are speaking here. I don't think this has to do so much with the kingdom. I think this has to be with this is how he became and how he felt, and people become jealous and nervous, and I think that he changed. And also, David, when he became king later, didn't he do something that was wrong? Didn't he do something where he sent somebody to battle?
Yep, yeah.
So I'm saying it seems like this seems to be something that is quite popular in the dynasty.
As Shakespeare said, anachronistically, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely, and that's why the Torah has lots of checks and balances for kings, specifically, right? But we will see the differences when we get there of David HaMelech's mishaps and Shaul's mishaps. David HaMelech makes mistakes, and David HaMelech suffers terribly for it, and he corrects. Shaul is not able to break that cycle fully. We're going to see attempts. He's going to try to break out of that cloud a few times, and he's not going to succeed. He's going to snap back. But Shaul, we're going to see Shaul shortly struggling with this right now. So just a few things just to think about here. Well, let's finish the last pasuk of this perek. The last pasuk is pasuk lamed. It says Vayetzeu Sarei Plishtim, and the princes of Philistine now leave. Vayehi Midei Tzeisam Sachal David Mikol Adei Shaul Vayikar Shmo Yisrael. So what happens is that David manages to take control before they get too far, and it improves his standing even more. Just a very basic question: why are the Philistine lords leaving right now? Why do the Philistine lords leave at this point in time? In our story, why suddenly they're a rash attack from the Philistines?
Did they sense something going on to them?
Right, so this is exactly what Shaul wanted. That was David HaMelech going into the hornet's nest. He just now not only killed them, but he embarrassed them terribly. So that's a terrible shame. So what happens is the Philistines go out, and this is the reprisal attempt in which David HaMelech is supposed to die. What does David HaMelech do? He nips it in the bud before it can even turn into a full-blown war. What happens? Therefore, Vayikar Ba'enei Vayikar Shemoi Ma'od. His name became even more powerful. So what Shaul had intended to be, his downfall for doing this humiliating thing to the Philistines, turned into the act of his greatest honor. Is that once again, Shaul's attempt to downgrade David or kill David was once again turned on its head, and David HaMelech finds his greatest power in this as a reference. This is really a very, very interesting network over here. Another reason why it is that the Plishtim could attack right now is an interesting thought that the Radak suggests. Let's take a quick look at this Radak. The Radak is to be found in source 23. Okay, so the Radak says, Vayikar Shmoi, his name became very powerful, heavy. Hayoyakar Be'enei Kol Shamim Shamoi. Anybody who heard David's name now, there was a lot of gravity placed on his name. Uvidrash Vayikar Shmoi Bahalacha. His name became strong in Halacha. Kevon Sheshamoi Plishtim Shenosa David Isha.
Okay,
So what did the Philistines do? They said, well, our sages read your books, and your books tell us that upon marriage, you don't act in the military service. So therefore they said, this is it. Why are they leaving right now? Because this is our window of opportunity. David is the general, essentially. We don't want the general, so we have 1 year now, essentially, to do everything we want. And therefore, what happens? Now, Melech v'nilcham imohem, v'lo yu yodim ki David chacham hoya, v'doresh ba'med dvarim amorim, be'el melchemes rishus. David HaMelech says that's only when it comes to an optional war, when Israel says, well, let's go conquer new territory, where it's a war which doesn't have to happen. However, be'el melchemes mitzvah, when it comes to a war of a mitzvah, which is a war of self-defense, or a war of conquest of the land of Israel, those are two options. Hakol yotzim afilu chasan mechedroi v'kala mechubazai. Everybody is conscripted to the army at that point in time. So David HaMelech says, you need to have a little bit of Torah Sheval Peh, oral tradition, in order to understand this. And David HaMelech went straight back out after his wedding into the army and destroyed the attempt of the Philistines to reprise. Just that's an extra nuance over here in this story, which adds a little bit of dimension to it. What I'd like to focus on are two particular items over here. Number one is that Shaul becomes, let's look at these two emotions over here. He becomes an eternal enemy to David, but what's the emotion he experiences before that?
What?
Fear. He experiences fear, and therefore he now is eternally fighting or eternally in conflict with David. That's where the Tanakh sets it up at the end of the section. What is creating this extra fear now? What is it that creates this fear, does Tanakh tells us? What is it that generates our fear? So he's definitely afraid that David HaMelech is going to take over, but there's something which solidifies that fear. Michal. You see over here, this is such an amazing thing. He said, think about what's going to happen over here. Look what the Radak says in his own words. This is so powerful. In 22... Michal bas Shaul ahav asoy, and the daughter of Shaul loves David. Lefichach hoisif lira miponov. Therefore, because he realizes his daughter loves his enemy, therefore he became more fearful. Lishnei dvarim, for two reasons. Ha'echad shira ki Hashem imoy, because number one, he saw that Hashem is with him. Ve'od shemichal bitoy ahav asoy, ve'lo yuchal ligrom lo misa al yoda. He won't be able to use her now. Meaning to say, where are her loyalties? Her loyalties will be with David, and we'll see that what she's going to do. And even if he conspires, there's essentially now another spy in his palace who's on David's loyalty side. So he realizes, this, if you think about this over here, the greatest power that's wielded in this perek is not the conspiracy, but love and loyalty. Just like if we think about this, where is the power being wielded? It's being wielded in the loyalties. And Shaul is realizing that all his loyalties are turning coats. Not because they're rejecting him, but because they're embracing David. Yonatan and Michal are now on his side. He's stuck. Anything he wants to do is not going to be stuck by himself trying to fight David. And that's a very alone place to be. We're going to see now, as we come into the next perek, how both Yonatan and Michal are going to try to alleviate the issue, how they're going to try to stop Shaul. Because their loyalties really do truly lie with David. And this is a reason for great fear, which the Radak is describing. Just, you know, it's a deeply powerful moment over here. One other item I want to just focus on, and that is how we gain power. So we think about this for a moment. David HaMelech has been offered power in two options, opportunities in this parak. He's been offered to marry one daughter of the king and then the other daughter of the king. Now, marrying the daughter of the king isn't just marrying the daughter of the king. That means a lot. So, you know, coming back to just describing this book I was reading, just if we read through history, secular history, and read how many people were poisoned, how many individuals were massacred, how much conspiracy was afoot just to become the heir of the throne across the ages, it's horrific. It's devastating. Do you know what people used to do to try to find the heir, to find the heir in marriage or kill the next heir so that they should be... The power games are shocking. Here, David HaMelech has been offered two times a foot into the palace of the king. What does he do? Both times he says, no, thank you. Now, it might be because he realizes that it's just going to create more of a dynamic of pain. Because he realizes that if he goes in, and he knows Shaul realizes who he is, and so he knows that it might be too dangerous. So it might be one reason why he's doing it. But another reason why is, is let's take David at his word. What does David HaMelech say? When offered power, what does he say? What's his response? He's like, I'm too lowly. I'm a nobody. Isn't that fascinating? The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, this is a very famous Mishnah, it says, Hu haya Omer. And so this is the Mishnah in Avos, which is, where does it appear? In 21. Hu haya Omer. Naged Shema, Aved Shema. You try to spread your name, you lose your name. You try to spread your name, you lose your name, which is what what is famously known as Kol HaBoreach Mikavod. Borech Achara Kavod, anybody who chases after honor, honor runs away from you. You know, they say the story about the fellow who comes to the rabbi and he says, Rabbi, really, really, I just want people to respect me. I just want people to give me honor. You know, Tevye, and his, you know, if I were a rich man, you know, I would have that seat on the Mizrach Vant, and everything I would say, people would listen to, because when you're rich, nobody cares, right? You know that. So, Rabbi, I just want to be a person who's respected in the community. So the rabbi says, well, the Mishnah says that you've got to run away from honor in order for you to find honor. So the man comes back, you know, 3.5 weeks later, and he says, Rabbi, I've been running away from COVID at every turn. He says, nobody's still noticing me still. Whenever I speak up, they still speak over me. Whenever I try to say things to my kids, they don't honor me. Whenever I'm at a board meeting, it doesn't... What's going on? So the rabbi says, yeah, you're right. You know, you're running away from COVID, but every 2 minutes, you're looking over your shoulder. Right? It doesn't work that way. What's happening with David HaMelech? David HaMelech genuinely is saying, no thanks. No thanks. It's all right. Let it work out in its own way. Meaning, Hashem, I know I'm anointed. I know I'm the king. But it'll work out. Ultimately, what happens is... he does become the king. It all falls into his lap, ultimately. But his active role in it is very minimal, ultimately, in taking over the power. And if you think about it from the other perspective, let's flip the tables for a moment. Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech, what about him? What's he trying to do over here? He's trying with all his might to grasp at the straws, to hold onto every vestige of power. And as he's grasping and trying and plotting and leveraging, it's disappearing underneath his feet. Every time he tries to capture David, that's a moment where David HaMelech is actually gaining power. So if we think about it over here, the attitudes to power and what's happening is exactly the flow of this Mishnah. But it takes it one step further. And with this, I'd like to close with one last point, which is we move into Perek Yotes. Perek Yotes now tells us about one extra level of power searching, and that is with Yonatan. Take a look at this really, really fascinating description over here. So we're moving into the section called Split Loyalties in the source pages, and in the text, we're moving into Perek Yud Tes. So here we go. We're going to miss out the Septuagint for a moment. We'll come back to that. Here we go. So the Pasuk Aleph says in Yud Tes, we're going to do Aleph to Gimel. So at this point in time, now Shaul comes out very clearly about what he's trying to do. So Shaul has a general meeting in his hall, and he says, the rules of the house from now on inwards is, you see that man, kill him. Right? That applies across this house. But Tanakh is telling us, and an aside, we know that Yonatan has a very dear relationship with David. So he has the loyalty shift, right? Meaning, now he has, if you think about it, in Shaul, he's probably has two voices. He's my father, the king. He's my friend. What do I do? So Yonatan runs out, tells David, my father's trying to kill you. Loyalties gravitate towards the pole of David. Don't come to the table at breakfast tomorrow morning. My father has a particular field he goes out to every morning, takes a stroll in the palace grounds, wherever it is. I'm going to meet with my father there. You hide on the side of the field. And I'll have a conversation to my father. I'll try to appease my father from this edict. And you'll see what happens, and I'll tell you all the conversation which you didn't necessarily hear. What's happened over here, the Malbim points out, is there's been a shift. Up till now, we've been hearing Shaul's voice. It has always been a subtext. He says, you know, I'm going to try to, you know, throw the spear, make it look like an accident. I'm going to send him out to war. I'm going to marry him off to my daughter. He's going to get, you know, this terrible prize from the Plishtim. It's all been this covert, deceitful way of killing David. Now Shaul HaMelech has been pretty clear about it. So there's been a shift up. There's been if you think about it, the gear has shifted up over here in terms of Shaul's mission of destruction. So, Yonatan now, what is Yonatan going to do? So this is Yonatan's plan. We have to think, as we hear his words, How can he possibly sell this product to Shaul? Meaning, what does he have to say to Shaul, which is going to appease Shaul HaMelech? So here he goes. Let's do this this section and then think about things for a moment. Vayedaber Yonatan b'David tov el Shaul aviv. So he spoke to Yonatan, spoke good about David to Shaul. He didn't sin to you. He didn't do anything bad against you. And everything he has done is good. Look, he put his whole own life on the line when he tried to fight that big Philistine. And Hashem saved all of Israel through him. You were happy at the time. Why are you going to make a mistake and spill innocent blood? To kill him for nothing. So that's his presentation. Does Shaul know this? Shaul knows this, right? What's he adding over here? What's he trying to like really? What is his tact? What is his ploy over here in this conversation?
He's trying to tell him all the good things.
Okay, so he's focusing on the good. He also pointing out that David HaMelech never really overtly did anything, and that's true. David HaMelech never did anything. It's all the external surroundings. The women are singing about him, not me, right? That whole business where it happens. Michal loves him, not me. Yonatan, right? It's all these things where it's people around David. So he's pointing that out. The Malim does something remarkable, and that is he says, you know what? You know what he started doing? You know what it says at the beginning? It says that he spoke good about to his father. He said he spoke good to Shaul. Good to Shaul means what about David?
Bad
about David. So you know what the Malim says? You know what the conversation started with? He says, look, you know, I know he's not much of a guy. You know, I can see why you have your doubts in him as a son-in-law. And, I definitely understand. But, so meaning to say, the Malbim says, the way the conversation started was, Tov El Shaul. He gave Shaul what he wanted to hear at the beginning. Right? He gave Shaul, it's almost like the Kalev episode with the Meraglim. He gets up and he says, I have more to tell you folks. And then everybody's listening. They think it's going to be more of the same tune. And then he changes tune. So this is his in over here is... Is not, you know, really. And then, by the way, by the way, so yes, Shaul's here. This is Yonatan's attempt over here. And this is the Malbim understands it. So he sort of feeds the beast, in a sense, like meaning the sphere of Shaul, and then he tries to appease it. Does it work? Answer is, well, yes, to a degree. Pasuk Vav, Vayishma Shaul b'kol Yonatan, Vayishava Shaul, Chaya Shemim Yumas. He says, you know what? Shaul says, I'm going to make an oath, Chaya Shem, by the life of God, if he will die. What's Shaul doing over here? What's happening in Shaul? He's trying. It's this person who knows what's good. He hears that the clarion call has reached his ears. He's trying to get there, but he's struggling with himself over here. That's why he puts on the shvuah. It's lahavdil. Again, this is a very, very demeaning way of looking at it. You know, the person who says, I'm going to pay for the entire diet at the beginning, right? Means that there's no breaking of it. This is it. I'm taking a shvua. I'm going to make sure that I'm going to get through this. I'm not going to kill David. But it is interesting to notice, by the way, that he doesn't say I'm not going to kill him. He says he won't die. Okay. Vayikra Yonatan la David. Vayagid la Yonatan is called a dream. Oela vayovi Yonatan la David. Shaul vayilafonov kiat mol shesham. And he brings him back, and everything is rosy. David is in front of Shaul. Everything seems to be going just fine. However, and let's move the last psukim over here, and then we'll. And we will close with that. I think I put them on a different piece of paper. Just one second. Here we go. Okay, so let's just see what actually comes of Shaul's best intentions over here in Pasuk Ches. What actually ends up happening? He says, "Vatosef amilchama liyos vayetzer David vayilachem baplishtim vayach vayimakar gadolah vayenusu miponav." David HaMelech continues to be militarily successful. And the Philistines are all running from him. And as David HaMelech ascends, what happens to Shaul? Diametrically opposite, starts descending. He descends into this bad place. And once again, he's sitting in his house, and that spear is next to him. And David is playing, because remember when Shaul's in that place, that dark place, David is trying to help him out. And he tries to throw the spear, and David says, sorry, so long. David escapes and leaves the palace. This is the last time he's going to be on these terms with Shaul HaMelech. If you read the words very carefully, Vayach Esachanis Bakir, you know that he hit, it's almost like it says, it's like he hit the spear with the wall. That's ultimately almost what it sounds like it's saying. What the Al-Sheikh says is he was trying to throw it so hard, he wanted to pin David to the wall, that when David moved, it broke the spear on the wall. That's how hard it was, as if he used the wall to break the spear. I mean, that's the degree of power and anger that's in Shaul's arm at this point in time. You can imagine the rage in that. But you think about this, we have to feel at this point in time, it's really pained for Shaul, if you think about it. He has a man who's trying so hard. He made a shvur to his own son that he would not kill David, and he can't hold himself back when he's in this cloud. He can't hold his hand back. He's tortured. He's trying to stop himself, but he can't. And this really sort of, this is a turning point. David Melech can't, there can't be reconciliation at this point in time onwards. Just one or two thoughts. This will close in this whole dynamic over here. First of all, you see the shift of loyalties of Yonatan. Yonatan's loyalties are clearly in the camp of David. But here's something to think about. Take a look at that first pasuk in Perek Yotes for a moment. What is the problem with that first pasuk? Let's take a quick look at that pasuk. There's something inconsistent internally in that pasuk. What is wrong with that verse? So again, Vayidaber Shaul el Yonatan benoy, they'll call out David on Mrs. David. So he gives the edict to kill David. Yonatan ben Shaul chafetz be David moed, and Yonatan really desired David. He was very close to David. What's inconsistent? Okay, so the servants are there, but that's true. But the servants have always been there. Yonatan's name. Look at Yonatan's name. One time it's spelt Yonatan, another time it's spelt Yehonasan. Right? There's an extra hey. Isn't it interesting? There's two spellings of the same word in the same part in the same pasuk, meaning you couldn't get more blatant a contradiction than that. So where does the hey come? Where does the hey not come? So one of the commentators that we look to when it comes to these type of issues is a commentator called the Minchas Shai. He comments on a lot of the grammatical aspects of Tanakh. Minchas Shai says, take a look at source 27. He says a really interesting idea. And that is, he says, he notices a greater pattern, but our pasuk is the crux of that pattern. He says, "V'hine v'nefesh Yonatan nikshara b'nefesh David, meiresh sifra ad hacha." This is Aramaic. From the beginning of the book until this point, until this beginning of Perek Yotes, Yonatan bar min trei Yonatan. The name of Yonatan is spelt lacking the hay, except for two exceptions. Right, and he gives the two examples. He gives the two examples. But basically, up till now, it's all been Yonatan. From now on inwards into the book, it's going to be Yehonatan, with one exception. Meaning, the Minchas Shai is pointing out something which we may not have noticed necessarily just by reading the book on a cursory level, and that is that you can divide Sefer Shmuel into two sections when looking at Yonatan. He was Yonatan up till now, and now from now on inwards, he is Yehonatan from now on inwards. Fascinating. And our pasuk essentially is that hinge where this changes. So what's the significance of this, if we think about this? Like, meaning, what's happening? This is not a letters game. There's something going on with Yonatan over here. So some of the Mepharshim suggest, so the Al-Sheikh, some of the more Kabbalistic Mepharshim say, well, we know that people have hays added to their names in Tanakh, right? This has happened before. We've seen Avram turn to Avraham. We've seen Sarai turn into Sarah, right? We've seen this addition of a name, and that has been a state of, in a certain sense, elevation, right? They've become who they really should be. At that point in time, Avram used to be, we'll call it, you know, a local influence, and now becomes an international influence. Same thing with Sarah. This is a step up in their mission on earth. Isn't that fascinating? At the very moment where Yonatan's loyalties are in question, and he sides with David HaMelech, is the moment in time in which he really fully expresses his mission. Is that fascinating? He gets this additional hay in his name. In a certain sense, think about this. This is remarkable. He could have looked at himself in the mirror in the morning and said, like Shaul said to himself, I am the true heir to this throne, and I didn't demand and deserve this power, and I'm going to do everything in my power to retain this power. And you know what? He would have remained the rest of his life as Yonatan. The moment he realized that, you know what? The heir to the throne is my friend, David. That was his mission. His allegiance to David was where he found his fullness in life. Is that remarkable? Now think about this, coming back to the thing. How do we achieve power? What was Shaul doing? Shaul was clinging onto the power and he kept losing it. What does Yonatan do? Yonatan bequeaths the power and gains in power. Meaning he woke up every morning feeling and knowing that he's doing the right thing in life. He knows that Hashem's grace is upon him because he sacrificed because he realized what was right. And he didn't talk himself into another version of reality. That was when he experienced real Yonatan. If you look very carefully, just as a fascinating point, in the Minchas Shai, he said, remember, up till now he's all been Yonatan, except for two examples. The two exceptions he gave are when Yonatan plunges into battle. Remember when there was that crazy battle, crazy odds, and Yonatan and his arms carrier are the only two attack all those Plishtim, the tens of thousands of Philistines. That's where the other time Yehonatan experienced, meaning, when is Yonatan really in his zone? When is he really expressing the will of Hashem? Well, it was in that battle where he led into battle, and it's at the time when he becomes subservient to David. That fascinating? This is the hymn. And if you think about this now, thinking about from those three perspectives, how do we gain power? David gains power, in a sense, by rejecting power. How does Yonatan gain power? By acquiescing to David's power. Where does Shaul lose power? By grabbing onto power. And that's the dynamic which we're seeing over here in the beginning of this, the end of Perek Yud Ches and beginning of Perek Yud Ches. A very, very terrifying and not intuitive way of expressing exactly what this mission of Perek Avos says. Negad Shmei, Avad Shmei. You want to make your name great, you lose your name. And this is what we talk about. Mez Hashem, next week we're going to now move on to full-scale plight, Michal and Shmuel. Now we re-enter into the scene. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful week.